Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Welcome. Our guests tonight are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, and joining us from Juneau, Greg Erickson of the Alaska Budget Report. This week, we'll be spending a lot of time on the Alaska legislature as the legislature completed its work just a few days ago. Greg, let's start with you. What would you say is the overview of the 90-day session? And you had some expectations coming into the session. How did they turn out?
Well, Michael, it was an era of good feeling. I've watched legislatures now for over 30, 35 years, and I can't remember a legislature where there was less real contention. Part of that had to do with the fact that there was huge amounts of money around, and it's always easier to make people happy when they can be satisfying their needs. So that was what was most remarkable to me. If we hadn't had that decoupling bill and the cruise tax, there just wouldn't have been anything to argue about.
Can you tell us about decoupling? You've explained the legislation before, but what happened to it?
Michael, I've explained this legislation in about 10 stories, and I'm sick and tired of it.
But since we're stuck with it being important.
Well, I'm not so sure it's important. I frankly, my opinion is it's the mouse that roared. But to stick to the facts here, the legislature passed legislation that creates a new system of decoupled oil and gas production taxes based on separately calculating the costs and the revenue. Our tax system for our production tax system is sort of a income tax, even though they don't call it that. The legislation is a response to fears expressed by a few people, particularly in the Senate, that producers committing to ship gas through a pipeline constructed under the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act, what everybody calls a GIA, could lock in reduced oil taxes that result under the pooled tax when large-scale gas production begins. And a lot of assertions that, my God, we could be making $6 billion the day in oil production taxes the day before the gas starts, and the day afterwards we're making $4 billion. My own view is that it was a much ado about very little.
And we'll find out how...
One thing I should say is Governor Parnell will have the final say on that, and there's a lot of speculation that he will veto the bill.
Really? Okay, that would be a very interesting development, especially since it's the bill of the Senate Finance Co-Chairman. Paul Jenkins, what were the other major issues outside the budget, policy questions the legislature worked on this year, and you can... let decoupling go. You can decouple.
I want to go with decoupling. I want to couple with decoupling. The legislature, I think the cruise ship tax was probably the one that got the most headlines anyway. There was also efforts to have on the oil and gas side anyway, have exemptions and tax breaks to get more exploration going. That's from Governor Parnell. They talked briefly about returning, there was a bill to try to return local control of coastal zones, and that didn't go anywhere this year, but it got a lot of support. And so the indication is it'll be back next year. They'll get to deal with that again. They've got the scholarship. The governor's wanted a scholarship program, $400 million worth, so they set up a legal framework where, yeah, you can have a scholarship program. We're just not giving you any money. And of course, there's always the Alaskan Malamute as the state dog, which was huge. And of course, dead people getting the PFD.
And I might add, there were people who voted against the Malamute as the state dog in the Senate. I think there were four or five of them. They even had a debate on it. Steve McDonald, yep. Anchorage community leaders seem very happy with this budget, and why shouldn't they be? There's a lot of money in it for them.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. It's about $564 million in capital projects that come into the Anchorage area. You've got a long laundry list of roads that are going to be upgraded, drainage projects that are going to be initiated. You've got buildings that are going to get built, and there's probably going to be some vetoes, it sounds like, too. Governor Parnell is not very happy about the size of this thing, but this is an election year, so it's awfully nice for lawmakers to go back and just say, looky here what I brung you, and that road that you needed, and this upgrade for this intersection that we needed so badly. Mm-hmm. We can now pay for it. So a lot of money that the lawmakers were able to stuff into that capital projects budget. Governor Parnell again early on had said, hold the line on this, but they it's an election year.
And that works both ways, because Governor Parnell will have to make some vetoes that'll make some people unhappy.
Exactly.
Greg, nobody runs on the premise, and if elected, I intend to spend billions and billions of dollars on capital projects. I propose to break the bank. In fact, some Republicans seemed sheepish after they appropriated all this money. Please explain, how do we have so many people run as small government advocates and spend money like this?
Well, it wasn't just Republicans. The Democrats were looking pretty sheepish, too. Cognitive dissonance is never in short supply in the legislature. Contradictions abound, and this perhaps was the most dissonant of the sessions I've seen in many years, despite its the era of good feeling. Mike Dugan said, basically said that in the... he said we can talk over here about how we've got spending under control because our revenues are going to be less, and then we turn around and spend this kind of money. The governor, in his press conference, said he was going to ratchet things back, so we exercise some restraint and we save for the next 10 years. He was talking about the capital budget. But minutes later, when we asked him about the huge amount being spent, I put that in quotes, on these tax incentives, particularly for Cook Inlet, his answer was just absolutely 180 degrees away from that. He said, "I say, how much money does the state government need?" That was Parnell's response just minutes after he'd said, "We're going to have to ratchet things back." So, I don't know. Go figure.
And what did the Senate leaders in particular say after the at their press conference after the legislature was over? How did they spin the session?
Well, I think they spent it in a way that they were trying to be nice to Governor Parnell. They realized that the ball's in his hands now. If those good projects are going to survive, it's up to him. I think they tried to make it sound as if he could take some a lot of credit for those. Their point was the second point that Parnell made. We have lots of money, and they really hit on the fact that they've already put billions into savings.
Senator
Con Bundy sort of objected to that, noting that we have billions in money we owe our retirement systems, too, and that sort of offsets it.
I believe Chairman Stedman said this was a savings session, not a spending session.
Yeah, that was the spin.
Okay. Paul, how did oil and gas make out in this session? After all, at the beginning of the session, we heard from the oil industry that they want to change this in taxes and weren't going to stop asking until they got it.
Well, before the session, I think, even got underway, there were it was a letter to Governor Parnell with 15 legislators asking for changes in the oil
yes.
tax, that kind of thing. Nothing happened. ACES was virtually untampered with. It still remains in effect. I guess there were some minor things. There's incentives for Cook Inlet exploration and for gas storage there. But as far as big tax, we want to talk about decoupling, of course we can. But if you want to talk about big tax savings for the oil industry, which I think was their major push this year, I don't think they got what they wanted.
Did that surprise
all.
You?
It did, because if you stand back and look at that, if you look at the ACES, the STEP kind of tax structure.
The Palin.
Yeah. It really is onerous, and it's burdensome. So I really expected that to change a little bit. Now, the left won't think that. They've never seen an oil company. They don't want a hose. So that's what I'm saying.
Okay, Steve, and the tourism industry, how'd they make out here? And tell us a little bit about the cruise ship tax. I know Greg White has some comments on it, but we'll get both of you in here.
Well, I think the cruise ship industry, I think it made out fairly well. It got, I believe, what it wanted. A couple of years ago, of course, there was a voter initiative put on the ballot, and voters approved it, increasing the head tax for the cruise ship industry under an agreement reached between the cruise ship industry and Governor Parnell. They agreed to drop it from about $46 to, I think, $34.50 on the head tax. And then in return, the cruise ship industry would drop the lawsuit that it's filed against the state. So this happened. This was approved. There are some folks who say that Governor Parnell should have been a little bit tougher in getting assurances from the cruise ship industry that more ships would be coming to Alaska, as our viewers, I'm sure, know, and our listeners on radio know, that cruise ships have been the number of cruise ships coming to Alaska have been dropping over the last couple of years, and they should have gotten more. He should have gotten more assurances from the industry that the ship more ships would be coming this way. But the governor seems happy with the outcome, and I think the industry is as well.
And how do we measure whether the tax change was successful or not?
I guess the only way for folks like us who are going to be able to really measure that is if there are more ships that are put back onto the schedule that come up here to Alaska. We saw a number of ships cut last year that brought the number of visitors to Alaska way down, at a pretty steep reduction. We're supposed to see more ships cut out of the schedule this summer as well, which is going to hurt communities in Southeast, as well as places like Fairbanks, where cruise ship companies send their customers. I don't know if we'll be able to see a difference or if there is going to be a change this summer. It may be too late with the schedules. We may have to wait till next summer, the 2011 cruise ship season, to really tell if this had an effect.
Thank you, Steve. Once again, I'm Michael Carey. I'm here with Paul Jenkins, Steve McDonald, and Greg Erickson is joining us from Juneau by telephone. Greg, what kind of marks would you give Governor Parnell for this session? And tell us about his education proposal. He got a victory, but it seems to be incomplete, as Paul indicated. And I know you had a few things you wanted to say about the cruise ship tax, so you can throw that in there, too.
Well, Steve gave a good summary of the cruise ship tax. I would just add that the governor's original proposal had two elements to it, one of which was a $20 million tax credit that would funnel $20 million of private money into Alaska travel industry marketing, destination marketing for Alaska. He did not get that. That got no traction at all. But the legislature did give the travel industry an additional $7 million in general fund grant money to as sort of a consolation prize. So while the cruise ships got everything they wanted, the local folks who run the tours in Alaska only got half a loaf, if you will. How did Governor Parnell do? I would give him a C. I'd give him a C plus, maybe. Didn't make any huge mistakes. The his education, his scholarship program, I think was poorly thought out to begin with, and I don't think he showed the leadership that he could have in terms of compromising. That was a potential victory for him, and as it was, he got only sort of a sop. There was a major education piece of legislation passed, though, and that was Senator Hoffman's and Senator Meyer's bill that eliminated the sunset on the local school debt reimbursement, and which provides, assuming it's signed into law, a continuing appropriation of enough really to build one rural school in Alaska in the future, every year in the future. And a lot of people hope that that will end the lawsuit in which the state has been judged to have failed its constitutional duty to provide equal education to rural students.
Greg, are you familiar enough with the lawsuit to know the chances of that particular approach satisfying the court? I know the court hasn't been satisfied up till now.
Well, that's true, but the problem with these kinds of lawsuits is that you can win those lawsuits. The plaintiffs really did win that lawsuit, and yet, unless the legislature is willing to appropriate the money or the courts are willing to take some really draconian steps of basically take over the school systems in those areas, and direct that the money be allocated, and they're very reluctant to do that. The plaintiffs don't really have a lot to go on, so I think there's a good chance that there may well be some sort of agreement that would at least end parts of that lawsuit.
And I think we should note that there are several lawsuits, and at least one of them has been going on more than 10 years. I believe that's correct, isn't it, Greg?
That is correct.
Okay, Paul, the new Anchorage Assembly is taking shape, and we have a new leader of the assembly. Tell us about the new leader, and what is the ideological makeup here?
The new leader is Dick Cheney, and it's difficult to peg him as a conservative or a liberal. He's come down on both sides of the question on several occasions. He was former chairman of the Assembly for several years during his previous 10.5-year stint on the Assembly. I think what we wind up with Ernie Hall and Paul Hoeneman and Mr. Cheney, we wind up with an Assembly that's probably not as far to the left as it was, but is still noticeably to the left.
And Patrick Flynn is the
vice chairman. Right. It'll be interesting to see what they do with things like the inspection and maintenance program, taxes, that sort of thing. It's not a huge change, but it's a noticeable change.
Okay. Thank you very much. Steve, Governor Parnell intends to sue the federal government, challenging that the Obama health care law, as it is now, it's a statute, mm-hmm. is unconstitutional, and he's going to put some lawyers to work on it and spend some money on the lawsuit. Tell us about that.
Well, Alaska is now joining 19 other states. It'll be a total of 20 states that are involved in this lawsuit against the health care reform bill that the Obama administration pushed so hard for. Basically, the Parnell administration says that it's unconstitutional to force people to sign up and pay for health care insurance. And this is the basis of the lawsuit. Critics say that there is no basis for this lawsuit, that it is constitutional with the administration and Congress.
And I think we should note here that some of the critics are law professors at distinguished institutions.
Correct. And they say that there is precedent for the federal government to do such things as it's doing here with health care reform. Senator Begich, who voted for reform, said that this is just a waste of money. It's going to cost the state.
Not to put too fine a point on it.
Yeah, it's going to cost the state a lot of money. The state of Florida says that it'll cost like $5,000 to be part of this lawsuit. There's another state that estimates it's going to be about $100,000. So I guess that's probably pretty good range right there. It'll fall in someplace in there. Begich says that this is just a waste of money. Then, of course, you got the other side of the equation, the Republicans in the congressional delegation, Don Young and Senator Lisa Murkowski, who just say, we need to challenge this. This is unconstitutional. And then there are also people who criticize, mainly if the folks who are in the governor's race, challenging Governor Parnell for his seat, that say, you should have done it sooner. You know, what kept you? You know, it should have been done long ago. So a wide variety of reactions to what he's doing, but it's going to take quite a while for this to be sorted out, I'm sure.
Greg, courts. I'd like to get you in here if you have some thoughts on this. But first of all, I was going to say, I was interested in this question of forcing people to buy health insurance, not life insurance, health insurance. And first of all, it doesn't take effect for another 4 years. And second, the way if you don't have health insurance, you will be forced to buy it is through the income tax code where it'll be taken out of your taxes. So I thought that was interesting, kind of surprising, and it does make sense from a point of view of logic of how they'd ever get the money from you. But Greg, do you have some thoughts, I guess, first on maybe perhaps the nature of the lawsuit, but second, the politics of this for Parnell?
Well, it's been a tough issue for Parnell. He was engaged in a debate down here at the Republican State Convention, everyone else who was running for governor, the other three candidates who are running for governor on the Republican ticket, all said they thought the lawsuit was a great idea and that which should have leapt in right away. And Parnell was sort of on the defensive, defending himself as a guy who does his homework first. And he did his homework, I guess, and now he's leaping in. I have not studied the lawsuit. I did read a pretty good article in the Alaska Dispatch in which quoted Jeff Feldman's legal analysis, and he seemed to think that they did a fairly reasonable analysis but didn't look closely at the issue of standing. So who knows? I know that I've been forced to pay Medicare insurance for years in my taxes, and now I'm benefiting from that. I don't know that forcing individuals to do things is anything new.
Yeah, and also right now, if you're on Medicare, they are withholding $90 or $100 a month or whatever it is, some amount while you're receiving it. Okay, Greg, is there a pipeline in our future?
Well, let's hope so, but I don't know that. I think you're talking about the a in-state gas pipeline.
Yes, I am.
And the legislature lobbed another $16 million at studying that, and I'm convinced that they'll continue lobbing money at that in larger or smaller quantities as the prospects for higher energy prices wax and wane. It is a real problem politically in Alaska, where people see us as being a huge storehouse of stranded gas up there in the North Slope and oil on the North Slope, and yet they have to pay high prices for their fuel to heat their homes or run their vehicles. So as long as the costs of shipping it remain so high, I think that it's going to take huge subsidies and in order to build such a pipeline, and perhaps that's what the legislature and the state will end up doing. And they certainly seem to be headed in that direction with the Cook Inlet subsidies. Those result in high levels of consumption and are counter to conservation and run contrary to all the free market principles people like Paul spout all the time. But
when I'm warm, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll just have to wait and see. I don't think it's going to be something that's going to be resolved anytime soon.
And what can they do with the millions that they've appropriated?
Study, more studies. That's the thing.
Okay. I'm curious, Steve. You're running for governor. You're not the incumbent. You're Ralph Samuels or some of the other challengers. Mm-hmm. What do you have to say about this session?
About the legislative
session
that just concluded?
Session.
Well, if you're a fiscal conservative, you certainly do complain about the amount of money that has been stuffed into this capital budget. I guess.
And Ralph Samuels did that.
Yeah.
But it's your party. They're your people.
Yeah.
And if you're Hollis French, you participated in it, although
yeah.
he's a Democrat.
He's a Democrat, right. Yeah. Yeah. And you also have to look at the aspect, too, that we're getting a little soft up here economically wise. You know, are we following in the same path as Lower 48's been suffering the last couple of years or so? A lot of these projects that have been put into the capital budget are going to be looked at as keeping the economy going, giving people jobs, keeping things moving forward. So I think that's going to be taken into consideration as well. And then I guess you slam the governor for not pulling the trigger fast enough on a lawsuit against health care reform. I guess too. I guess you get on that bandwagon, but. I
Governor, your problem is you're not rabid enough.
Right, and I think the governor's too. He's got to really does have to watch it, because if he does go off and chop some, a large amount of money out of this capital budget, he's going to make some people angry too over this.
Let's try Paul here. Paul,
no.
It seems to me if you're Con Bundy, if you're a state senator, longtime legislator, you're not running for re-election. You put out the message more or less, and you didn't participate in this budget hardly at all, that you will rue the day this is going to happen. And if you're running for governor, and you're saying some version of none of this would have happened if I'd been there.
Well, I think so. And I think Alaska's economic future is, in fact, uncertain at this point. Throughput in the gas out of the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline is dropping off every year. It's running two-thirds empty. We're spending like crazy. We did save some money, but there's going to be as I think has been mentioned here earlier, we've got a PERS-TERS bill that's coming due. We've got lots of money we're going to have to spend, and nobody knows what's going to be coming in. That's what I would be hammering. It was irresponsible that there was no real incentive to get the oil industry up and exploring and investing in Alaska. There was none of that, and if I were running against him, I think that's what I, rather than say, well, you didn't get in the lawsuit, I'd hit him on the economic issues, because every Alaskan's starting to worry about
and
that.
And then there's the open season that looms, too, if that doesn't work out very well.
Okay. Greg, we're going to run out of time here, but please tell us, I know you've thought a lot about the incentives that were put forward for Cook Inlet gas. Tell us about those incentives and what they could and do mean.
Well, I mentioned a moment ago that they result in people consuming more gas than they would otherwise. That runs counter to the whole ethic of conservation. And it runs counter to the ethic of the free market that says you should pay the real costs for these resources as a consumer.
But isn't somebody like Mike Hawker essentially saying, the Finance Committee chairman who I saw on the floor, that we're running out of gas, there won't be any gas unless we do something?
Well, that is an alarm that Rail Belt politicians have used very successfully to engender a lot of fear. I think the problem in Cook Inlet is much more a regulatory one, and here I would come down probably on the side of Paul. I think that there's definitely been a crisis created here, and it's been created by the regulatory authorities who denied a contract which would have allowed, albeit with much higher prices, secure supply for many, many years.
So what Alaskans want is not just more gas, but cheap gas.
Yeah, well, they're not going to get that unless the state really subsidizes, in which case we'll have a lot more gas consumption.
Well, the one thing we can't subsidize is more time. We're out of time here on Anchorage Edition. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you right here next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.